You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Darrell Connor.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll look at why some people are sounding the alarm about declining recruitment for new police officers here in Wisconsin and around the nation.
First, for some people who commit a crime in Wisconsin, a few are able to participate in a practice that allows the offender, the victim, and the community to come together to talk about the offense and learn from mistakes.
Restorative justice is a voluntary system used in specific instances in different communities. Many people who have participated have said that restorative justice does more to rehabilitate offenders than just something like jail time. They also say it allows victims to get closure from the incident and makes the community accountable to both parties.
Coming up in just a bit, we'll learn more about how this method fits into the overall conversation about crime and criminal justice. But first, we talk to a state lawmaker who's making the case for restorative justice practices to be used more widely in Wisconsin.
Democratic State Senator Lena Taylor joins us. She represents Wisconsin's 4th Senate District, which includes Milwaukee. Senator Taylor, welcome back to Central Time.
Always a pleasure.
Now, how did restorative justice first grab your attention and get on your radar?
Well, you know, I'm a lawyer by profession, and this is something that I've been involved in actually since David Lerman was the assistant district attorney who proposed to then DA Mike McCann. I couldn't think of his name. And when he proposed it back then, originally this concept started with just retail theft. And then we quickly learned that all of the stats show that the concept of restorative justice is a pathway to transformational reform and repairing damage that's been caused by the crime, and for individuals who are the defendants to see the effects that they literally have caused in their community, the depth of the hurt, the pain, and the harm, not only to the victim, but the victim's family and even individuals that are connected to the defendant. It was just, you know, I've experienced working through these circles, these processes, and it is really amazing how eye-opening it can be for not only the defendant, but how healing it can be for them and for the victim.
And
so I got involved back when I was a public defender.
And you write that this is kind of a different way of thinking about crime and punishment. This is looking at not just kind of the state versus a defendant, but the community, the people affected by the crime, not just the victim, but how it affects people in a neighborhood. What is it like to think in that different way?
You know, this concept has been going on for more than 40 years around the world. But as I mentioned, it's something that started in the Milwaukee County area back when I was a public defender, and I can't even believe it was way back in like 1996 or 3. And so it's like, oh my goodness. But the effect can create major truth, dialogue, healing, and solutions. It's an opportunity for the defendant to be human and to see the humanity of the victims and to see the scars that they create. That's a kind of healing to trauma that doesn't really exist, right, outside of these restorative justice kinds of efforts. And I'm really excited. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to meet the newly elected Representative Kalen Haywood-elect. He is the youngest African-American legislator in the nation at 19, and one of the things that he did was start a restorative justice program even in the schools. So it is healing for our young people so that we can build a new generation that thinks like this, but it's healing for our community because of all of those pieces that we've talked about.
Are we using restorative justice enough right now, or do you see a lot more room for growth?
Oh, definitely a lot more room for growth. We are not using it enough. Dane County has a restorative justice court. We don't have that in the largest city in the state, the first-class city, Milwaukee. And so, of course, there is more that we need to do. It gives accountability, right, to offenders that they don't normally have at a depth that I think awakens their humanity within them. And so we need to do more of that because it's like a giving back to what you helped to destroy. And I think those practices should be not only with adults, I think they should be with youth. I think it should be properly implemented because I think it will help us to manage conflict. I mean, think about it. Restorative justice is really a way for people not only to be heard, but for those conversations to happen in a safe place.
You mentioned properly implemented, and I've heard people say restorative justice is great when it's done right, but sometimes a school or a community says, okay, now we're doing restorative justice, but they haven't done the training. They don't have the expertise. They don't have the right methods in place. What would you do to make sure that as restorative justice is expanded, it gets the resources it would need to support it?
You know, I'm hoping that the Attorney General sees this as something to invest in, as well as the legislature and the new incoming also governor. And so that's, you know, one way is that it's done in the budget, that it's done through the Attorney General, who is, so to say, the top cop of the state. But it has to be based on the values of that community, right? And it has to have principles that are consistent with inclusion. It has to be facilitated dialogue so that no one feels re-victimized, for lack of a better way to say it, sitting in that meeting. And we have to deal with the truth. I mean, like, we foundationally have to say, like, the hurt, the harm, and we have to be honest about that has been done. And we have to talk about how to restore that. We have to talk about what is it that will help a person, right, get from wherever they are in whatever hurt or that they've caused or whatever hurt they've experienced if they're the victim. And we have to also make sure humanity is incorporated in that, because if we don't, then basically what we're saying is, you know, this is just a, you know, I don't want to call it an itching session, but, you know, that it'll just be that. So it's really important that we do that. And these people who normally have participated in it are volunteers. And as you said, we have to make sure they are adequately trained by individuals who are credentialed in knowing what to do. I think if we do that, we could prevent a lot of what happens in municipal court for teenagers. I think that we would be able to put them on a different path. It's a way that we could deal with a lot of unpaid citations, especially in communities like Milwaukee, where, you know, we're becoming quickly like Ferguson, a debtor's prison, you know, kind of concept. And so, and we have to track what it does, because I believe that it will have an effect to increase safety. It will have an effect to lessen the cost of our traditional justice system. It will create stronger communities, and it will reduce recidivism. So I think it's important that whatever gets implemented needs to adequately track what's going on, or, you know, what is it?
We'll leave it there. Senator Taylor, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Senator Lena Taylor represents Wisconsin's 4th Senate District in the state legislature. Her district includes Milwaukee. She joined us to talk about restorative justice efforts in Wisconsin.
Our next guest is a restorative justice expert and helped establish the Dane County Restorative Justice Court in 2014. He's with us to talk about how to put the method into practice.
Jonathan Schar is director of the Restorative Justice Project at the University of Wisconsin Law School's Frank J. Remington Center. Jonathan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we heard the case for restorative justice from Senator Taylor there. Take us into how this works. I think we can all imagine a criminal trial based on seeing one or seeing one on TV. What happens at a restorative justice session, meeting?
Sure. So there's a number of different models or methods that could be employed to how it operates. But a general session, so some of the things that Senator Taylor talked about is really making sure that we have the correct individuals there, right? So you're going to have, generally, you might have the victim, the individual responsible for harm in a particular criminal matter, and then also representatives of the community. And the important element, as she noted, was individuals with proper training. And that also includes community members who've been trained in restorative justice and restorative practices. And so what happens is, after a process, you know, might get a referral, spends a significant amount of time usually meeting with each individual. So this is the pre-work that needs to be done. So a pre-conference or pre-circle work that is done, meeting with each individual to understand who this person is, to find out what has happened, to explore what the impact of what this harm or crime has caused to people's lives. And that's everybody, right? So she mentioned in there this idea, or at least alluded to the idea of the ripple effect. And that is that crime doesn't just affect sort of the direct victim, but there are many other individuals who are impacted when a harm or crime occurs. And that's going to be right around that direct victim, so their family, their friends. And the same sorts of ripples exist around the individual responsible for that harm. So the first thing is bringing people... So speaking with those individuals and really understanding what happened and understanding again how people have been affected, and then really trying to determine where do we go from here. So the thing about restorative justice is really that it is future oriented. So we'll figure out what is needed to repair the harm. So when we meet with both individuals separately, then ultimately what we will do is then bring individuals together. So you'll bring the individual responsible for harm. You might bring the victim together along with community members, and then have a facilitated process where you walk through those very specific things of what happened, how people have been affected, and then what people think needs to be done in order to repair the harm. And that's really where we see the accountability. So bringing together and activating those three key elements, right? Again, so victim, the person responsible for harm, and community, allows us to engage in a very different way around a harm and around a crime that has occurred.
So a courtroom in a criminal trial might assign jail time or a fine or community supervision. What kind of outcomes come out for the person who perpetrated the crime from a restorative justice process?
Sure. So the first thing is about establishing understanding. And that, again, is about understanding the impact of what has happened. So that's part of the discussion. Then when we look at what does something like a repair harm agreement look like, that can be incredibly varied. So that is as unique as the individuals and as unique as the case itself. And really, you can have those things look almost however you want. So there might be, again, direct apology that may occur with people, or even something like direct service, right? So if someone has directly harmed another individual, and in some way they can directly pay back that person via personal service or service to something that is important to them. Maybe it is to a cause or a population group that's important to them. This idea of targeted and meaningful community service that occurs. And then there's sort of other creative solutions that, like I said, could be whatever the victim feels that they need. So that's sort of unique to the individual. So again, for some people that, like, is an apology or is a reflection, is specific acts of service, is specific things that someone wants a person to do. So it gives a victim a voice of saying, like, here's what I want to see happen. Here's what I would like to see done. Here's what I think the appropriate response is for the person who's responsible for causing that harm. Here's what I think this person should do in order to sort of pay me back, to repair some of the harm that has occurred. That obviously can include restitution for any sort of monetary damage that has occurred or any sort of loss that has occurred. But again, can go well beyond that into very, very creative solutions for people.
We're talking to Jonathan Schar right now, director of the Restorative Justice Project at the UW Law School's Frank J. Remington Center. He's with us to talk about how restorative justice is used in some parts of Wisconsin and the impact it can have on communities.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of restorative justice efforts? What questions do you have about the process? And if you've participated in restorative justice, we'd love to hear your story. You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@WPR.org.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
We continue our conversation about restorative justice efforts in the state with Jonathan Schar. He's the director of the Restorative Justice Project at the University of Wisconsin's Law School Frank J. Remington Center, and helped start the Dane County Restorative Justice Court.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about restorative justice? Have you experienced it yourself as a participant on one side of the table or the other? We'd love to hear from you. And what do you think of this idea of using restorative justice in Wisconsin's criminal justice system? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller right away. We've got Luke on the line in Milwaukee. Luke, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Luke?
Well, I was actually kind of wondering, first off, I'd like to say that I know any kind of restorative program has to be better than what we currently have with the U.S. prison system. But what I was wondering with this specific Restorative Justice Act, does this really work in the case of really heinous crimes like murder, things that may never be able to be taken back? How is this kind of handled?
Luke, thanks for the call. Is this, are cases of murder or other irreparable harm something that would come up in restorative justice, Jonathan?
Sure. So, Luke, thanks for the call. Actually, so this area of serious and sensitive crime is actually where I spend the vast majority of my time. Our project actually facilitates the vast majority of victim-offender dialogues and serious and sensitive crimes around the state, which includes very serious crimes, again, homicides, sexual-based offenses, armed robberies, burglaries, things like that. And where we see that primarily is in this context of sort of post-adjudication. So that's really restorative justice after the court system has taken place. So a lot of what the context we're talking about here is as an alternative to the criminal justice system. But again, this question brings up a really important point that it's really possible at all points and phases in the criminal justice system. So there's this point, again, where we're working often in these serious cases, which is after the court process has happened. But I can even say that I spent a couple months ago working alongside the criminal justice process on a case that resulted in someone's death, and working with the families involved, the person responsible for that, and again, really bringing connection and healing into this space that is artificially separated by our traditional justice system. And the results in that case, again, were very positive, where people were able to, again, ask questions, find out and understand more about what happened and how people have been impacted, that allowed them to move forward rather than waiting sort of years and years or waiting for a justice process or a criminal justice process to finish, to be able to start to get some of those questions answered, you know, right away, and to start the healing process much earlier, and to find something that they felt was sort of a much greater sense of justice than they were finding sort of inside the courtroom.
And this is a program that's voluntary. Nobody is forcing, say, the person who is the family survivor of someone who's been murdered, for example, to meet with the perpetrator.
Absolutely. So all of the requests that we handle on those serious and sensitive cases are victim initiated. So you might have a surviving family member in a homicide case who, again, has had questions potentially for years or sometimes even decades, things that their family has torn them apart, and they're looking for answers. They're looking for information and, you know, want an opportunity to sit down with that person responsible. Because if you think about the traditional system, you have greater than 90% of cases that don't go to trial. Of the cases that do go to trial, only a small percentage of those do have a defendant testify. And in the case where a defendant does testify, it's not to say, here's what happened and why. It's to say, I wasn't there, I didn't do it. Well, that's not very satisfying to a surviving family member in a homicide case. So what we're serving to do is to sort of fill in a lot of those gaps and to help people find peace and healing in the aftermath of serious crime. And it has been tremendously effective. People have talked about it, this opportunity changing their entire lives, feeling like it has given them their life back.
Let's bring on another caller now. Jeffrey is with us in Madison. Jeffrey, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jeffrey?
Yeah, so I had actually served time in the Wisconsin prison system. I made some mistakes when I was 17, and it resulted in doing about 10 years incarcerated. Five of those years was spent in a facility called Kettle Moraine Correctional Institution, and I was a part of the restorative justice program there. My biggest question in this scenario is, really, what are they going to define as the restorative justice program? Like, what is it going to include? The restorative justice program in the institutions, what they had us do was crochet hats and mittens and blankets for, like, homeless and hospital-needed people, which is great and all, but it really doesn't do anything for restoring justice to anybody. It doesn't help you learn anything.
Jeffrey, thanks a lot for the call. We don't have too much time left, but Jonathan, just because we call something restorative justice, in this case, sounds like may not be restorative justice.
Yeah, so absolutely. And I'm actually familiar with the restorative justice programs that do occur in the prison system. I wasn't familiar with one at Kettle Moraine, so I guess I'm probably not incorrect in that assumption there. So yeah, there are certainly many things that people might call restorative justice, but again, it really does need to contain these elements of, again, the key people involved, right? So individuals responsible for harm, those who have experienced harm, and community members, and looking to repair damage and repair harm that has happened, about addressing specific instances and about addressing what has happened in the aftermath of crime.
Thanks a lot for sharing your experience, Jeffrey. I want to spend our last couple minutes on an important side of this we haven't gotten into. Does this work? What do we know about the outcomes of people who've gone through restorative justice as opposed to the traditional legal system?
Certainly.
Or in addition to, I guess.
Certainly. So there's a lot of stuff. There's mountains and mountains of research and empirical data that is surrounding restorative justice. It has been extremely examined to a very high degree. And so everything that I'm going to talk about now, I'm going to just talk about some of the general statistics, but everything I'm going to talk about is based on meta-analysis, right? So we're talking meta-analysis studies, which is studies of studies. And so that brings our sample sizes into the thousands of cases, right? So thousands of individuals that we're looking at rather than individual instances. And so when we look at some of the meta-analysis, what we find, we're first going to look at recidivism. So that's, again, the likelihood of someone committing a new offense. And generally, what they found is that individuals who go through a restorative process versus a traditional criminal justice process, and we're talking for sort of similar offenses and similar offenders, their general reduction is about 30% reduction in recidivism for individuals who go through restorative processes. And some studies and some programs have found a reduction of recidivism by as much as 50 to 80%, which is certainly incredible. Another element is looking at an area of restitution. And so what they found when they've looked at individuals who participate in restorative justice is they find about a 25 to 50% greater likelihood that restitution is fully satisfied. And I think the reason for that is because of this really human interaction. Rather than having a judge tell someone, and you're going to pay $600, you actually, again, sitting face to face and having to hear from the person whom you have harmed how and why that's important to them and what has happened, it really increases that sort of human connection and the likelihood of that happening. Additionally, there's found that there's greater procedural and outcome fairness, as well as satisfaction. So individuals, and again, we're talking both victims and defendants, are more satisfied and feel the process and outcome are more fair in a restorative process. And finally, what we've seen in some studies is some long-term health outcomes and even psychological impacts that are very positive. That what we're seeing is that individuals are less than half as likely to fear re-victimization, are much less afraid of the particular individual because they're no longer this scary other.
It's a good place to leave it. Jonathan, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That's Jonathan Schar, director of the Restorative Justice Project at the UW Law School's Frank J. Remington Center, with us to talk about the idea of restorative justice. We also heard from State Senator Lena Taylor. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time.